Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 65. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. My co-host David Todd is taking Christmas off, but one guy who's not going to take off Christmas, at least most all of Christmas, is Alex Cazora. Merry Christmas to you, and thanks for joining me. I'd be awful at this thing if I had to do it all by myself.
Merry Christmas to you too, Dave. Yeah, we just got our sleigh and packed up, and now we're just circling the globe, bringing cheer to the world, right? Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds good in theory. The Steelers have been bringing us, mostly cheer all season. We sit here at what are we, 16 now? They've only lost 5 games. One would think that they're going to easily run the table at this point, talking about playing the Ravens and the Browns. Let's quickly kind of go over some of the things that were said, the last couple of days by Todd Haley and Keith Butler. And before we do that, a quick rundown of the injury report, nice and short this time of year. And hopefully it stays that way for the Steelers the rest of the regular season on and possibly into the playoffs. Mike Mitchell was back at practice on Thursday with that shoulder injury. I think all of us kind of thought that would be the course of action with him. James Harrison was back to work after being given a day off on Wednesday. The same with William Gay. However, the team did give Matt Spate and Will Allen off on Thursday. So really, when we go into Friday here, and who knows, we might get the final injury report as we do this podcast here. But we expect whoever is on the injury report on Friday to be listed as probable, and we really expect all 53 guys to practice, right?
Yeah. It's so remarkable. It feels so opposite. The Steelers start the season with so many injuries, and now they end it healthy. And really, right now, they're one of the healthiest teams in the league. So that's a pretty good Christmas gift.
Yeah, and people will probably say, well, how can you say that, being as how they've lost so many players, for the season early on? It's all relative. Mm-hmm. As far as a 53 goes, a current 53, and what's left of it, I guess we should say at that point, really they are a really, really healthy team. And when you look at the Ravens, who the Steelers will be playing on Sunday, what a mess they are. And they've still got a couple of guys on the injury report, guys like Jimmy Smith, with that thigh, who, by the way, it looks like he is going to play. Two other guys on their injury report don't look like they're going to play. So keep that in mind when we say a fairly healthy team. It is relative to their current 53-man roster, because without a doubt, this team has had their share of injuries this year.
And just real quick, if I could just butt in for 2 seconds, it's just about adjusting to those injuries. I mean, if Beecham went down now compared to when he did go down, I mean, it's a world of difference from going from Villanueva, who has more than half the season to get ready, and then, compared to him going down now and then Villanueva having to step in. We saw how much, he struggled for the first month. That's going into playoff season if hypothetically he had to start right now. So just that ability to adjust and adapt and get guys experienced to move on and ready for the playoffs. So there's any sort of weird blessing there. It's just being able to deal with those injuries early, plan for them, overcome them, and then, and then being ready.
Absolutely. And I think, if you had your druthers, you'd rather suffer your injuries kind of early on in the season so you mm-hmm. could, kind of get past them. And speaking about Alejandro Villanueva, for what he's been asked to do, I've seen some people on the site say, well, there's no way he can be your starter long term, and he's getting a lot of, it seems like, more negative than he is positive. But the fact of the matter is he is the starting left tackle. The team is winning, and he hasn't played awful.
I've been really impressed with him, and I'll admit I was very critical of him early, and I wasn't sure, you know, long term where he would be at, but that's why you play the whole rest of the season. I think he's progressed rapidly. That's a credit to his work ethic and his military background, and a big credit to Mike Munchak, because I'm not sure there's another offensive line coach in the league that could have worked with Villanueva with his massive project that he was. I know the Denver game was tough, but that's just a very good pass rushing team with, you know, you got Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, a couple of young guys, so that you're going to get some natural struggles in that game. But I think overall I've been very impressed with Villanueva, just watching him game to game and watch him get better and clean up some of the mistakes that he's made. That's all you ask for is progression. I think he's done that very, very well.
What do you have him down for sacks for the season? And you gave him two for the Denver game, right?
I don't think I gave him two. Let me double.
One and a half?
I think there was one and a half. I think that put him up to maybe five for the year. But let me double check, because I don't want to misspeak.
Right. Well, I'll talk while you do that. But for people to say he can't be the starter, well, he is the starter. And it's not like he's giving up a ton of pressures and hits every week. Is he giving up some? Yeah, I mean, for a guy that's filled in, you know, like he's been asked to do, and with the background that he's had, you know, and the quick transition that he's had to make at the position, I mean, he's played. Nobody's talking about sending him to the Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. And he's definitely not playing to the level of Marcus Gilbert is on the right side. But I really think it's incredible, and the Steelers have had worse out there at left tackle, i.e., Mike Adams, i.e., mm-hmm. Jonathan Scott. Mm-hmm. Even Max Starks had his issues.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. And I pulled up a stat. I did have him for one and a half against Denver. That gives him five on the season. But I only put so much stock into that. That's not to say all end all for me. It's just one number we have as our guide. The other thing I like about him is just how clean he plays. I have him for just one penalty that was accepted on the season. And whenever I talk to Andy Guyette or his wide receiver coach at Army, who I interviewed several weeks ago, he just talked about how technically sound he was and how clean he was and how he would never hold. And you're getting to see that now. I mean, you know, Villanueva in his first year playing has one penalty in, what is it, eight games or nine games now? That's remarkable for a young guy to do that. I mean, you compare that to Marcus Gilbert, you know, basically a veteran who has six penalties on the season. So just from that standpoint, how clean Villanueva plays, you know, not beating himself, I think is pretty remarkable.
And I think on either the sack or the half sack the other day, false step, you mm-hmm. know, got him there. And what was it, the spin move mm-hmm. by Shane Ray on the other one, I think.
Yeah, there were some good plays by Denver, and some, you know, Villanueva will make his own mistakes, and there's some stuff, you know, he's not the run blocker you'd like to be. I think he's still fighting that height a little bit, and you know, can you work him out of a three-point stance as often, because, you know, does he have the ability to explode and get low and things like that? Those are all challenges he's fighting, but again, you treat him as a rookie right now, because that's basically what he is, a guy that's never done this at the NFL level before, who was on a practice squad for 1 year after making that transition back to the offensive line. I don't think people realize they do and they don't. They realize how big of a project it is and how remarkable it is to go from just a guy trying to relearn that craft to being thrust into a starting left tackle in the NFL and holding his own.
Now, he's not – his ceiling definitely is not Joe Thomas, mm. but he still has, I think, a little bit of room until he hits the ceiling, right?
He's got a lot of room. Again, like I said, I mean, it's so raw and such a project. I mean, I bet you 2 years from now he's going to look back at himself today and kind of laugh and say, look how far I've come. I mean, just knowing, you know, the kind of work ethic and attention to detail that he has, and assuming Mike Munchak stays around for a couple more years, that doesn't take a job elsewhere, the time they're going to have to work again this offseason, you know, to go through OTAs again, go through training camp again, just reps. That's just what he needs. I mean, it's a guy that hasn't had many, you know, in his career in the NFL. I mean, 2 years for an offensive lineman, for a guy of that body size, it's such a unique, you know, 6'9", 340, you don't see that. There's so many, you know, unique challenges that's going to be faced and you know, to obstacles to overcome. He's not going to be Joe Thomas, but there's still a lot of room for growth.
Yeah, he can. And mm-hmm. look, we know he's smart enough too. He can become a technician even more than what he is, and he seems like he can be that analytical type of guy. If you had to place your bets right now, is he your starting left tackle in 2016?
I've gone back and forth on that so much, and you know, Dave, I do that Ask Alex every week, and usually someone's good for a Kelvin Beachum future question in that one, and I've kind of gone back and forth on it. At first, I thought maybe the Steelers will try to bring him back on a 1-year deal. I know you've kind of disagreed with that. You know, you don't know what Beachum's going to want. But, man, I really think Villanueva can be the starting left tackle in 2016.
I think he can, even though I was a big proponent for Beachum getting a new deal. Mm-hmm. You know, now that we're past it and he didn't get one, it's almost like c'est la vie, you know. I really would find it surprising if Beachum makes it back right now, and even if he does, obviously if he is and he's back on any type of serious money, he's going to be your starter, and he deserves to be too, talking about Kelvin Beachum. But right now, I think the Steelers have seen enough out of Villanueva to know what he is and isn't and what he can be. And on top of that, you want to talk about a guy that's going to be cheap for you for the next several years. He's going to be an exclusive rights free agent after the 2016 season. He's going to be a restricted free agent after the 2017 season. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you get him signed up to a modest long-term deal before then. But he is up in age on top of it. But, I think more than anything, you don't have to go into the draft drafting a top-notch left tackle not, having to wonder what kind of growth process that player is going to have to go through. And especially with Steelers possibly picking right now, we hope below 20th, below 24th or so, you're not going to get a starting grade left tackle down that late either. So I'm with you. I think don't be surprised if Alejandro Villanueva is your starting left tackle for the next several seasons.
Yeah, if the only upside to bring Beachum back, if you're comfortable with him medically, which I'm sure the team will be, they know him best, is, man, if you could have Beachum as your starting left tackle, Gilbert as your right tackle, and then Villanueva as that swing guy, now you've solved your tackle depth problem, and now you're feeling comfortable there. If you do let Beachum go and you anoint Villanueva as a starting left tackle, you got to find depth because there's really nothing there right now.
Yeah, and I'm willing to bet they think it's Mike Adams still.
No, you think?
I'm telling
He's
you,
gone.
I bet they do.
No.
Hey, you know me. I hated to pick right from the get-go. But, he's going to be back on that told
yeah.
contract, at least to compete. So, you do have a guy like Byron Stingley. Mm-hmm. So I really expect him to be back on a on at least an invitation to training camp on a 1-year minimal deal. But outside of that, you're right. That's it for tackles.
But, the guy that I think that they think really highly of that no one else thinks highly of. You know what I'm talking about?
Hurt his ankle there at the end.
I'm talking about Chris Hubbard. He was the backup left tackle. They didn't move Gilbert over. They put Hubbard there. We've counted Hubbard off this roster for two straight years, and two straight years he's made it, and he's kind of been the top, this year he's kind of been the top backup. I don't totally know. They're seeing something that we don't, but it feels like they have a lot of faith in Chris Hubbard.
Well, here's the thing. He's not a guard.
No, he's played everything though. He has experience.
But seriously, go back to preseason and go back to what you've seen in training camps with him, and he, really, how many snaps has he played during the regular season at guard? During his career, not many at all. He's just not a guard. So the one thing that we haven't seen with Chris Hubbard during training camp, preseason, you name it, is him playing tackle, right?
Well, he played some tackle this year when Villanueva got injured.
Right, but outside of that.
Yeah, no, it's been very minimal, and I'm not trying to state the case for Chris Hubbard. I'm saying that I think they internally think higher of him than I do or than you do, because we're sitting here going, what do you really see in Chris Hubbard? But they've anointed him as the backup left tackle. I think he would probably be the next man up at guard. I'm sure there'd be an injury in game. I'm not sure about center. That's a possibility, though. I don't know if they would put Ligurski in there. I'm just saying, that's a guy that, because we counted him out the last two years, right? And
yeah,
he's the top backup lineman right now. Injuries have kind of, you know, forced the hand of that. I'm just saying that's a name to keep in mind because I think that they are internally high on them, on him, even though we're not. We're kind of lukewarm.
Heaven help us, right?
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're not saying. You're not saying. You're just saying.
Exactly.
How much? I'm trying to remember. Chris, when's Chris Hubbard's next deal up?
I don't think it's after this year. I think he's got another year. I'm just going off the top of my head. I'm just stalling while you look up.
Let me pull my Excel spreadsheet up here real quick, and we'll answer that real quick. No, he's a free agent after this year.
Oh, okay.
Unless I didn't update anything, but it seems to me that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season there. So
I bet they bring him back.
Oh yeah, and it wouldn't cost anything to do it either, right?
Right, and you just got to have some backup depth of guys that have been in the you know facility before.
Oh Lord, help us! but I mean, look, it's either going to be Beecham or Villanueva.
Yeah, for sure.
On the left side there. All right, you know, some of these. The good thing about Thursday is we get to hear our Keith Butler and Todd Haley a couple of times. Not only do they get to talk to the regular media in the afternoon, but they talk with Steelers Nation Radio during the day. Sound like Keith Butler wanted to say maybe a little bit more, but I mean, he did make it clear that there were some minor changes defensively in the second half of that game, right?
Yeah, he did. He talked about that there were some coverages that he went to in the second half that I guess the team was more comfortable with, something they hadn't used as much. I think his exact phrasing was to make the team feel better. So that's kind of a funny phrase. I know a lot has been made of, you know, just the team being a better communication and energy level and things like that, not as much schematically. But Butler did seem to indicate there was at least some level of schematic change. I think from my point of view, I saw maybe a little bit more cover too, which might have been the coverage Butler was talking about. He didn't specify, of course. Saw a little bit more of that trap coverage late in the game, some stuff like that. So that might have been a couple things that were tweaked.
And nothing earth-shattering, though.
No. I mean, you can't do earth-shattering stuff in-game and, you know, when you have your game plan, and you can only do so much as a defense.
Although I did find some of the comments made by Todd Haley quite interesting, as well as kind of when you stack those on top of the things that Marcus Wheaton had said either immediately after the game or I think on Monday or Tuesday. In essence, the Steelers went into that game offensively expecting to see a lot of one high, you know, safeties in the game, and look, you go back and watch the tape, right? I mean, that's a lot of what Denver did defensively. Well, lo and behold, they get into the game, and Denver plays a lot of two high in that situation. So, you know, Todd Haley basically, or in so many words, said, you know, they had to change on the fly, and Marcus Wheaton said the same thing. And I'm trying to pull the exact quote that Todd Haley said, especially when it came to Antonio Brown. He said that they basically, it was like an unscripted training camp scrimmage, you know, later on in that game when it came to AB. Now, I don't know how over the top Todd Haley is being in those comments, but I mean, here's the quote here. He says, in that game last week, we made some major adjustments offensively, and it had to do with him talking about Brown and where we were putting him. So I was calling a lot of plays that we hadn't practiced with him in certain spots, and for a guy like AB to handle it on the fly with very communication, because it really was. It was like an unscripted training camp scrimmage, if you will, some of the second half. So, you know, that says a lot, not only about you know, Todd Haley being able to adjust some things on the fly, but Antonio Brown to be able to move him around in different spots and get the results, especially against let's not fool ourselves, a great cornerback in Chris Harris Jr., who's going to the Pro Bowl as well. So really at this point with this receiving core that the Steelers have, talking about Brown, Martavis Bryant, and Marcus Wheaton, the way this trio is playing right now, the way Haley's, it seems to be adjusting to things, and the way, you know, Ben being Ben, this is an offense I would hate to play in the playoffs right now. I definitely want to play their defense, but not their offense.
It's a testament to just all parties involved. There aren't too many teams in the NFL that I can think of that can have, in Haley's words, an unscripted, you know, training camp scrimmage and still put up 30 points on the NFL's best defense. I was trying to go back and look to see what they did differently with AB, some new things. It was kind of hard to tell. Maybe they put him in a couple different spots. It's just hard to tell sometimes from an outside point of view. But, yeah, that's pretty remarkable when your game plan kind of goes out the window and you got to just start adjusting and just almost not sandlot football, but just kind of doing some stuff you didn't expect and having to pull some plays that you hadn't repped as many times and some things like that. It's just it's a testament to Haley for recognizing that, adjusting, not being stubborn. The testament to the players for responding to the challenge and making it look, you know, flawless and so smooth and efficient. And again, can't stress it enough, against the best defense in the NFL, and you torch them.
And now a lot of people don't realize this, and I think you're along with me on this as well, too. I'm a big Wade Phillips guy.
Oh, yeah. As a defensive coordinator, not a head coach, but a defensive coordinator.
Right,
yes.
Right. Not exactly. And I really like to kind of pay attention to things that he says throughout the season. And anytime, you've seen the videos, you know, you've been on YouTube in the past and some of the defensive breakdown. I think he does a great job with that. And I think a lot of what the Steelers do right now kind of predicated on some principles that Wade Phillips uses. And one thing that kind of stuck out in that game, and I think even Todd Haley hit on this the other day as well too, they played a base front with cover two over the top, and I guess that's something, you know, they haven't done a lot of. They played the base their base 3-4 up front mainly throughout. Even you know, all downs, and because of the sheer fact is they didn't want to get torched by the Steelers' run, and I think the stats kind of bear that out as well. The play of Malik Jackson in that game, they were just very, very disruptive up front there, and you know, having a cover two look in the back, and based on what the numbers they were sending up front, it kind of predicated Ben Roethlisberger having to throw the football 50 times in that game.
Right, that's exactly what Haley said, and usually offenses aren't successful when they can't run the ball and they're facing too high, you know, shells from their safeties, because a lot of times, you know, teams might be able to stop their run, but they're bringing that eighth guy into the box, and then you can start passing on them. If you can play really sound run defense and play too high, you're tough to stop as a defense. So the fact that Steelers were still able to overcome that without a running game against a too high shell, against a new look they didn't expect, and still be that successful, I really can't get over it. I know I'm harping on it like nothing else, Dave, but that is just so impressive on so many different levels.
And with a lot of, and, you know, let's not forget, they'd like to play man on the outside, right?
Yeah, with some great cornerbacks. I mean, there's some great talent there. and a great, great pass rush, you know, most sacks in the league, most forced fumbles in the league. I mean, every kind of stat that scares you, every kind of concept that scares you, they play it, and you put up 34 on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to hear, and going back to my original train of thought on this, was I went and listened to Wade Phillips talk to the media. I believe it was yesterday. That was up on the Denver Broncos website. And he's still very happy with, you know, you get the sense that he's happy with the way his defense played against the Steelers. He did say that he thought that they got him for some yards after the catch. But when you go back and you look at the raw stats on the yards after catch, it's like five plays, I think. I think in total it was something, I forget, I don't have them in front of me. I think it was like 129 yak yards. Let's see here. I've got it pulled up right now. Boy, the internet's great. 118 yards after catch. And how many completions did Roethlisberger have? 40? 40.
Yeah, 40.
Okay, so ready for some math?
Oh, man. What are we doing, 118 divided by 40 here?
Right, that'll give your average yards after catch. Let's see, 118. I'm going to cheat and use a calculator today instead of my toes. That's less than three. That's 2.95 yards per average after catch. You'd kill for those numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You really would. Go look around the NFL every week. Now, they did have they had four catches with yak of more than 10 yards. That's it. Mm-hmm. And Wade, you know, Wade's kind of disgusted with that. And how many explosive plays did the Steelers light him up for? What, many of them?
20 is the threshold on that, right?
Right.
So AB touchdown.
They had three of those, and one of those was the long one was a 23-yard touchdown to Antonio Brown. The other one was a fourth quarter reception over the middle to Marcus Wheaton, and the other one was a pass that was thrown short right to Antonio Brown that he really broke some nice yak on. But I mean, outside of that. And that's two games in a row that Roethlisberger's really hasn't gone deep in. So, you know, that to me, I guess what I'm getting at here is that says a lot about what this offense is. If they need the running game going against a smaller front or against a 3-4 that doesn't play a lot of base up front, they can do that. If you play a good 4-3 defense in the Bengals that really gets their work done without sending extra people, they just carve you up underneath the way Roethlisberger did a couple of weeks ago without having to go deep. If you play a team like the Broncos that play a lot of that surprise you with too high with a base 3 with a base 3-4 up front, and you're still able to, I mean, knock your socks off kind of statistics in the game. But, I mean, Roethlisberger still, I mean, it's the second time in his career he's completed 40 passes in a game. And the first time that one quarterback's done that twice during their career. 300 passing yards is nothing to sneeze about for sure. But, I mean, to me, that just really speaks volumes of what this offense is and really kind of a chameleon, you know, characteristic to it.
Yeah, just the word that keeps coming back to me, Dave, is just efficient while being limited. I mean, you were one-dimensional. You couldn't run the ball because that front seven was so good from Denver, but you were still efficient as an offense and move the ball, and there's not many teams in the league that can do that. I mean, New England, Pittsburgh, I'm not sure if there are any other teams that can do that. Green Bay, maybe.
And they were down 17 points and didn't panic.
Right, they came into halftime and, you know, made some more adjustments and they come out rocking. And that's just top. That's consistency. It's the same message from Mike Tomlin to the coordinators to the players. It's about veteran leadership, rallying the younger guys so they don't get their heads down. I mean, there's so many, you know, things that are tangible and intangible that go into it that make you a successful team.
And, you know, you're going to know it at some point in these final two. Here's the thing that we hope for. We hope that really D'Angelo Williams can get, 18 to 20 carries a game in these final two games. You know, maybe 100 yards in each one of these or close to it. Use them out of the backfield a little bit. What you and kind of segue here is you've already looked at a lot of the Bronco, I mean, at the Ravens tape. I obviously, you know, have gone through the last game that they played against them. This obviously is a little bit different Ravens team, especially defensively, than we saw way back in week 4. What are you expecting them to do this time around? Are you expecting, you know, too deep, make Roethlisberger carve you up underneath?
What's always impressed me about Baltimore's defense, and I think even so this year, even though it's been a bad year for Baltimore, is just all the different looks and personnel groupings they give you. I think Ben even talked about it in an interview he did midweek of just trying to identify where pressure's coming from, where coverages are at. It's very difficult to do. I think Baltimore still disguises their stuff and gives you still so many looks as much as any team in the NFL. I mean, you'll get the amoeba defense with the one defensive lineman. You'll get, a small base where you have two linemen, five linebackers, and four defensive backs. You'll get your traditional, you know, 3-3-5 nickel. You'll get dime packages. I mean, they just give you every sort of look. There's a lot of bluff pressure. You know, guys standing up around the line. You don't know who's coming and who's going. They're not a huge, heavy blitz team. They're not going to send 6-7 guys, but they're going to have, you know, safe, manufactured pressure of, you know, having everyone, you know, give the appearance of blitzing and then drop a couple guys out and rush four, maybe five at max. So I think just the battle in this one, Dave, for Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers offense is just trying to figure, you know, it's from pre-snap to that half second, maybe a second after the snap to, you know, identifying what pressure is and what their tendencies are pre-snap and then figuring out who's coming and who's going and what coverage you're going to get and what look you have in that half second, the second right after the snap. If you can win that battle and kind of beat them in knowing what's coming, then you'll have success. If you can't, you know, there will be some problems.
I mean, that non-cerebral quarterback of theirs?
You know it, yeah, yeah.
Hey, how far has he come?
And it's been, you know, people don't talk about it enough. I mean, for the...
No.
Oh, wait, who are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, they don't.
Okay, I thought you said no to Ben or something. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he's played so well from inside the pocket, even for the last 2-3 years now, and no one talks about it. They still love to talk about Ben outside the pocket. I mean, he's become maybe even better from inside the pocket than he is outside of it, which is such a crazy statement to make from where he was at the beginning of his career. I mean, people have overlooked that so much. That's probably what Ben does best now.
People just tend to forget, I think, that really the first six, seven years of his career were success mainly all athletic based.
Mm-hmm. And it's saving his career. It's prolonging his career. He couldn't do what he did in, you know, his first couple of years. Now he get himself killed out there. You see the injuries now. He's doing this to save his career and to save Steeler fans from a lot of misery trying to find another quarterback.
And in fact, he has gone down quite a bit this year. But I mean, but he is a much more cerebral, smarter quarterback, and it kind of makes you wonder. You know, I'm sure I'll get some hate mail for this. Is how much Todd Haley played a role in that? Or do you think? It's going to be a natural. I mean, more reps anyway. The maturation process and the understanding of the X's and O's and all like that. But it really makes you wonder, you know, how much Haley has been able to slow the game down for him.
Oh, I'm sure it's a combination, but I think definitely Haley's had a big influence on you know, showing how to play a different way for Ben. I think just the combination of those two, and it's really funny now to think about all the narratives that came up when Haley first got here about how much they hated each other. Thought Haley might be the best thing that's ever happened to Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, absolutely, and I, you know, everybody knows I'm a huge Bruce Arians fan because I mean I think Bruce Arians is the better offensive mind of the two.
Agreed.
Now, also Bruce Arians knows the value of explosive plays, and really so does Ben still. That's why you see him still hold on to the football at times. But I think Haley, I mean, I think Arians, if given the right personnel, you know, what he's got over there right now is perfect for what he's doing. I mean, look, he's getting it done with Carson Palmer over there.
Yeah,
and and you got to know that your quarter. I mean, Carson's taken some hits this year, and that used to be one of the drawbacks, you know, with Arians in Pittsburgh, that not using a fullback, but and Lord knows the Steelers finally got another nice one of those in Roosevelt next, but you know, it just goes to show you the balance of the two, and you know, I'm with you. I think Haley really has done Ben some wonders right now, especially when it comes to him being a more cerebral quarterback. Do you over under deep ball attempts in this game?
What's the over under? Am I picking the number, or am I choosing the over under?
I'll pick the number. Okay. I'll give you 6.5 on this one.
I'll say under. I'll say they do like 5 or something.
So in other words, you think they stay kind of status quo the way they've been the last couple of games? Because before that, Ben was averaging, you know, a lot more trips down the field.
I think the Ravens give you some pressure that kind of, you know, make you want to get the ball out quick. Maybe the Steelers, if they get a lead in this one, they might sit on the ball a little bit. You know, you'll see a little less of that. I think you can pick this Ravens team apart underneath. So I'll say 5. So I'll take the under.
All right, I'm gonna go 7. I'll take the over on this. I still don't think it's gonna be 12 trips down, you know, 12 long balls. Mm-hmm. But I think they're gonna get them in some situations with some one-on-one matchups on the outside. Because here's the thing, I don't think as good as Brandon Williams is, they're not gonna have him on the field every snap. So I think the Steelers are going to have success running the football against them with, you know, seven men in a box. So I think as the game progresses, Baltimore is going to have to find a way to stop giving up the 4, 5, 6 yard runs, yeah. in my opinion. And because of that, that should open up kind of the deep passing game for Roethlisberger.
Yeah,
am I right?
I think running the ball is still going to be tough on Baltimore, even against a 7-man front, because I love Brandon Williams. I love Tim Jernigan. I mean, I've been watching Jernigan. I think he's playing a little bit quicker, a little bit lighter this year. I mean, they do come off the field, but not a ton. I think, you know, last week Williams played 77% of the time. Jernigan played 71% of the time. Brent Urban's doing some nice things for him. So I think it's going to be tough to run on these guys.
I think they're going to be able to hit the edges on them, but we'll see. For sure, I would like to see them try to get D'Angelo Williams a little bit more involved than they were able to last week.
Anything on Baltimore's offense that scares you? I know probably not much. I have a couple concerns, but I want to get your take.
They like to stretch you laterally. I think at times, and we've seen this defense at times not be able to handle that. Outside of that. You know, look, they've lost Crockett Gilmore. They're probably going to have to play James Hurst as a number two tight end. Mm-hmm. You know, quite a few times in this game. Buck Allen. Yeah, I think he's okay. I guess he's really the biggest thing that I worry about. Maybe getting a ball to him out in space, out of the backfield, and them using kind of an east and west kind of. Outside zone, you know, that mm-hmm. Steelers have had problems with in the past.
Yeah, the biggest thing with me is just they're still a four vertical offense. They still, you know, they don't have the weaponry anymore, but you still get pass interference call or you get a lucky 50-50 ball or something. They're still a four vertical attack, and they got some big chunk plays against Seattle. And Seattle and Pittsburgh and in their kind of philosophy that cover three isn't too, you know, or is pretty similar. So that's my number one concern there. I think Jimmy Clausen, believe it or not, as crazy as it sounds, is playing some good football for them right now with Mark Trestman. I mean, he's getting beat up behind that Ravens offensive line that's been so dinged up on that left side. I mean, this guy's getting crushed, and he gets back into the ring. So I actually like what Jimmy Clausen has done. They run some 20 personnel, some two, you know, running back with Juszczyk, the fullback in there, which has given the Steelers some problems in the past against other teams that have run it. So there's a couple concerns, like any team. But if they can just – I think the Steelers in this one, Dave, just need to play too high, stop the four vertical attack, you know, trust your front seven to stop the run. You do that, you eliminate kind of all the options for Baltimore, you should have this one.
Absolutely, and that fullback, you know, they're going to get the ball to Juszczyk one time early. In fact, it seems like they kind of like to open up with him sometimes in some of these games, just to kind of keep you honest. I mean, but he's not a guy that's going to catch 6-7 balls, you know, out of the backfield. He's probably only going to play, you know, 15-20 snaps in total in the game. I mean, the verticals do scare you, especially if the Steelers do. I mean, look, go back to that Seattle game more than anything else. Mm-hmm. It just shows you how tough times they have had defending that. And even in the game against the Broncos this past week, Will Allen, and that looked like – I don't know what it looked like. It looked like quarters to me on that play, because quarters would zone – would zone up underneath there, and Will Allen has just got to recognize that. To me, that first touchdown to Demaryius Thomas, that's all on Will Allen.
Yeah, it was a good debate about that. I've kind of gone back and forth on it. There's so much miscommunication that kind of makes it tough to tell. For Baltimore, to bring it back to that, the one guy you got to stop vertically is Chris Givens. I mean, this guy can fly. He's got 6 of his 17 catches for Baltimore have gone for 20-plus yards. He's averaging almost 18 yards a catch. You got to keep a lid on him. You can't let him get past you.
We already talked about it. No sense burning air hot air on the cornerback rotation, because we know Blake's going to open up in both the nickel and the base. Surely we're not going to see them drop 8 this week.
No, and I mean Butler got away from that pretty quick in that Denver game. I think he did it 3 times in the first 2 drives that Denver had, and then he didn't do it again the rest of the game. So and a lot of times you drop 8 whenever you don't have a mobile quarterback that can beat you with his legs. They did that with Matt Hasselbeck because he's not a running threat. Clausen can run a little bit. He can move a little bit. So if he starts, you're not going to drop 8 because you're just going to invite Clausen to take off and get 6-7 yards.
What do you think about Ryan Mallett making an appearance in this one?
I'm really interested in that. You know, that's why I asked whenever we had John Eisenberg on Wednesday, you know, where he could be at. And I know John was kind of like, you know, well, he's only been here for a week. But I know I think it was I don't know if you posted it or if I read it somewhere else. I think Tressman said, you know, that Mallett's kind of comfortable enough where he could, you know, start or could play. He's comfortable enough. If it's me, like I said, I think I've been impressed by what Jimmy Clausen has done. I would have him be the guy if it was me, just from the outside point of view. But if it is Mallett, he does have a strong arm in that vertical attack that can be a dangerous combination. And so you got to be careful if you see Ryan Mallett out there.
Yeah, and I think I'm willing to bet Matt Schaub's inactive, and not because, I mean, he's not on the injury report, but he's got some sort of snap stipulation in his contract.
Oh.
A percentage of snaps, I think.
Okay.
So if he's that, and A, I think they want to find out if Ryan Mallett can be their backup next year.
Yeah.
So I will be absolutely shocked if Ryan Mallett does not get time in this game. I think they open up with Jimmy Clausen, and the first opportunity they have to pull the plug on him, they do it to get Mallett in there. Because Mallett, I mean, obviously Mallett's got a stronger arm than the two, right?
Oh, yeah. That, yeah, Clausen does not have a good arm.
Right. So, I mean, and they're not saying, they're obviously playing the game, you know, having some fun with the gamemanship in here. But I will be absolutely shocked if we don't see Ryan Mallett some in this game. And I think Mike Tomlin's well aware of that as well. I mean, anything else scary? I mean, realistically, this is a game the Steelers should win, barring the turnovers, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way it goes whenever you're against a team that's been so – just had such a tough season like Baltimore. The other two X factors, you know, I'm a big special teams guy. Kalen Clay for them, their kick returner, punt returner. He's an explosive, big play kind of guy. And then Sam Cook, their punter, for my money, is the best punter in this league, the best directional punter in this league. You're not going to get any return yards on him. He can pin you deep. So, you know, he's a guy that can really, you know, give offenses long fields. And as good as the Steelers offense can be, no one likes to have to constantly drive 90, 95 yards. You know, no one's going to be able to do that on a consistent basis. So, you know, the field position battle might not be in the Steelers' favor, and they have to overcome that.
And I despise whenever anybody talks about any NFL game and they say it's a trap game.
Yeah.
there's no such thing in the NFL. I will buy that argument in college football with the trap game. But, I mean, these guys are professionals. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as a trap game, even in this situation with all the injuries. I laugh at – if you use the word trap game with me on Twitter, I'm going to laugh you out. I mean, that's just how I am with it. I can't stand that. Now, with that being said, I do buy that teams this late in the season in a situation where they're out of it will do some things that they normally wouldn't do within a season. I think it's very, you know, very possible you could see a fake punt on a 4th-and-3 around midfield. I would expect maybe Baltimore maybe even to go for it a time or two. Maybe a trick, you know, a trick play or two. I mean, why wouldn't you in this situation? I think that's the kind of things the Steelers and Mike Tomlin need to be most aware of is really have to expect the unexpected in games like this and against Cleveland in a finale.
That's a great point, Dave. I agree wholeheartedly about, you know, Baltimore has nothing to lose. They're here to play spoiler the next 2 weeks against Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. But you're right. Anyone who calls like you said, anyone who calls anything a trap game in general is just off the mark. I mean, these guys have lost enough games they were supposed to win to realize nothing is a gimme. They've seen other teams lose to you know, other teams that they thought, you know, they should have beaten, things like that. And of all the games to call a trap game, Steelers Ravens late in the season, that's never never going to be a trap game. The Steelers Ravens, you know what's on the line, you know how close these games are. And real quick for Baltimore, the stat is only once this year at halftime has Baltimore been down by at least 14 points. That's only one time this year, even against Seattle when they got blown out 35-6, it was a 14-6 ball game at the half. So these guys, at least for a half, play competitively, so don't expect the Steelers to go into halftime up 24-0. It's not going to happen.
Right, and go look at the point differential outside of the last two games, really, for the Ravens.
Close,
right?
It's close, yeah.
I mean, they have been in every single ball game, and what was it, something in the first six games or seven games, they had an opportunity to win it on the final possession or something?
I think they were all with games within a touchdown, you know, was the final score. So, yeah, I mean, they've been in close games. They're a competitive team. It's Steelers, Ravens, in Baltimore. I mean, there's a lot of factors that tell you it's going to be a closer than anticipated or expected game.
Right, but with that said, I mean, this is a team that the Steelers should mm-hmm. – I mean, the line's 9.5, 10. I guess it's a perfect time for 42 minutes into this thing now. We've already talked a little bit about special teams, talked about both sides of the football. All right, how do you see this going on the road here?
I'm going to take the Steelers. That's pretty clear reasoning. I think everyone kind of knows why they're the better team. Baltimore is such a tattered team right now. But I think it's going to be closer than people think. I think the Steelers win by 10.
By 10, right? Possibly right on the number then, huh?
Yeah, so for all you Vegas fans out there, watch out.
give me a score.
I'll say 20. I got to do 10 here, so let me make sure my math is right. I'll say 24 to 14.
So you don't think they bust the 30 mark this week?
I think it has to end at some point. I think that run defense is still pretty good in Baltimore, and they just everyone elevates their game. So even though Baltimore's pass defense doesn't look very good, only 4 interceptions on the year, I think Baltimore gets their first interception against Week 10. I jinxed them on Twitter, everyone told me, so I'll say it, that jinx comes through. So I think Baltimore keeps the lid on things.
Don't you understand that you're supposed to pick the Steelers every week in a blowout, or you're not a true Steelers fan?
Remember when I picked the Bengals a couple weeks ago, and people just and the Steelers won, and people lost their minds at me? I was like, I've picked against the Steelers before. What do you want from me, people?
I have too. Maybe they just ignore when I do. overall, but I guess people don't understand that to do what you and I do, and to do it properly, you have to do this thing. It's called being objective.
What a concept.
What a concept. I don't know. Evidently, a few of our listeners like it, right? Because they still come. They still listen to these podcasts, and they still come to Steelers Depot. And we certainly do thank them and appreciate them for that. As far as I go with this thing, I think they come as close to 30 points without getting it. I think they do cover the spread in this one as well. So I just really I don't see how Baltimore, it's basically pick your own poison, I think, defensively. And as long as Roethlisberger doesn't make any boneheaded mistakes and there's not any short fields, even if there are short fields, and by short fields talking about at least, giving the football over to the Ravens on your own end of the field, as long as it's not with inside the red zone, I think the defense should be able to hang tough and force some field goals instead of some touchdowns in this one. So I like the Steelers to win this one 29-13. So I'm with you. I think it's probably a close game around halftime, but I just think the Steelers pull away with this in the second half. If they don't, if the Steelers lose this one, what's the narrative?
Oh, man.
And window jumping does not bridge jumping does not count.
Oh, well, that was going to be my answer. I'm sure the narrative will be something Antoine Blake, Mike Tomlin related, some sort of narrative there.
How do they lose this game? Turnovers?
Yeah, it's all the usual stuff.
Big plays?
Yeah, the Ravens getting their vertical attack and getting some splash plays off of that, some pass interference calls and things like that. The Steelers having long fields, Sam Cook. It'd be something like Baltimore gets to the midfield, their drive stalls out, and then Cook pins him inside the five, and then the Steelers go three and out, and the Ravens get good field position, things like that. And then, yeah, probably just some bad turnovers. Even though the Ravens have not forced a lot, like the Jets. Remember the Jets game last year? The Jets hadn't forced any turnovers, and they come in, they get four in that game or something like that. So just something like that, where you have just bad field position and some stupid turnovers and a couple of big plays allowed by the Steelers defense.
One good thing is, this is the first time that Martavis and Ben have played, against Baltimore this season. So, to me, Baltimore knows who he is and what he does. But I think there's just a tiny advantage not facing these guys earlier in the season. Antonio Brown, over or under 130 receiving yards?
I will take the over slightly of something like 135, 140 he gets.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well, too. More more or less than seven catches for AB.
If I'm doing 135, he's probably got more than seven. So I'll say he gets like a 10-catch, 135 kind of day.
So you like his chances of him topping? I mean, he's obviously he's going to top his yardage from last season.
Yeah.
I think if he's 100 something yards away from that, I mean, should easily get that. But he needs what? 14? Is it 14 catches to break last year's numbers?
I think 14 to tie and then 15 to break, maybe something like that.
I think it's 14. He's at 116 now, right? And he had 129 last year.
Okay, so 14 to break. Yeah, I think he'll get both. He'll get the receiving or the receptions and the yards this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he will, and who knows, he might get it against the Ravens on Sunday. Got anything? Got anything else to wrap us up with?
No, I think that's.
Is the injury report out yet?
I actually have not had my Twitter feed up. I don't think, but it's not going to be anything surprising. I don't anticipate everyone. The few guys on there should be probable, like you said, at the top of this thing.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, too. Okay, folks, we'll have more of these, obviously, before the start of the new year here, but Alex and I would really like to thank and wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. The traffic has been absolutely amazing on the site, and it's not, you know, it's more about what my guys do than what I do. And, of course, I'm talking about what Alex does. I'm talking about what Matthew Marksey does. Michael K. Reynolds, Tony's – how do you pronounce Tony's last name? Del Signore?
Yeah, I believe. Not like I've ever said it in person before, so that's
yeah, I don't think I just know him as Tony.
Yeah.
But you know, he does the fantasy stuff for us. Michael, of course, does the rapid fire conclusions every week. Melanie Friedlander, our doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knew? Steelers Depot has their own doctor they can turn to. She's done great for us. Of course, David Todd, my co-host on the podcast, has been excellent as usual. Our two new guys, Zach Grassinger and Josh Carney, look like they're starting to get their voices on the site as well too. And you know, two more people I really don't shout out during the season: Alan Gifford and Tim Rice. They do a lot of stuff for the site behind the scenes as well too. So thanks to all those guys. Thanks to the listeners and readers for making 2015 a great year for Steelers Depot. You can follow me on Twitter. Well, real quick, I want to shout out to a couple of people with some donations here. William Sophus sent us in some money. Thomas Sonic. Spencer Crick. Spencer's been a long-time follower and commenter on the site as well, too. Philip Garrow. Edward Verdream. And Tom Rarick. I don't think I mentioned his name the other day. Aaron Graffius as well, too. Folks, thanks for those donations. It really helps support the cause and fund what we do and pay for, you know, hosting and everything else that goes along with this. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Follow Alex Kozora, too. He's a good follow. At Alex _ Kozora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast @gmail.com. Alex, Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to the rest of our listeners. David, hopefully, will be back with me on Monday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.